Would it, you know?
What I wonder about on this double album is you've got all these various musicians and everybody wants to get their own input. How did you resolve conflicts when it came to deciding to do this or that, working on a song? Was it a mutual agreement, or did you have somebody at the top who...
Somebody was at the top, and I got no idea who it was. Julio Aiello.
Would he be the decision maker if you guys had a conflict?
He would be the decider, I would say.
You must have had some conflicts in the studio.
Well...
Or not so much?
Not really. You know, we didn't really know enough about it that then, you know, to have a conflict. We were happy to be there recording, and you know, with a national recording company in a wonderful studio that had all the bells and whistles. It was just amazing. So we were just tickled to be there. Nobody was really taking control. Maybe there was that I wasn't aware of, but I'm not going to complain about anything.
So when the final bill comes in for the double album,
right?
How much is it?
Plenty. It was more than Metromedia had ever put out.
Numbers I've heard. Last number I heard was 38,000.
Yeah, yippee, skip! Wow, what an awesome amount of money! $38,000. Wow, I think you're right.
That's all right.
But that ain't. Boy, that's nothing to what it costs even to do a one track these days.
Do you feel Metromedia did a good job promoting the album?
Yeah, I liked Metromedia. They were fun people, but they just really, they were like dated.
Dated?
They didn't know how to present anything as new as us. They were dealing with Ed Ames and Bobby Sherman, for God's sake.
Those were their two top acts.
Yes. So then they come along with Gypsy. They had no idea what to do with us, how to promote us, how to produce us. You know, I don't know. I'm just grateful for what happened out of that. It's just too bad we didn't, you know, that, I mean, Julio was so good. He was such a nice guy, but he was just too nice of a guy, I think, to produce. To tell us, no, you will not do it like that. You will do it like this. That's what you have to be like if you're a producer. And Julian never did that. We all got along with him so good. He went along with everything we wanted, and that I think that was a mistake. God bless you, Julio. You know.
Did you ever find out how many copies the album sold?
Nope.
One thing I'm curious about, when you first came back to Minneapolis as Gypsy and played here, right, where was it and how did that go over?
One of the first we did was St. Catharines, and we played, what was it, based on Hennepin, across here from White Castle. What the hell's the name of that?
Home Bar?
No.
Labor Temple.
Labor Temple. And then we played the Depot. And then we went back to L.A., and then we changed management.
Wait, hold on just a second. I'm curious as to how the crowd reacted from the people who knew the old underbeats and their sound, and now they're seeing Gypsy with a brand new sound.
Right.
How did that go over with?
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, it was magic. You know, it was wonderful. It really was. I mean, they took us, they just took us into heart. And, you know, we still have quite a rep.
So you had a good reaction to...
Yeah, it was excellent. In fact, it surprised me, you know, and the guys in the band that they'd actually accepted us this well.
What did people come up and say after your gigs here?
Gosh. They go, Jimmy, gosh. They go, Rico, gosh. No, I don't remember. Come on.
Do you have a favorite song off the first album, Jim?
To Know Him Is to Love Him.
God.
No, wait a minute. That's not our album. Okay, let me look at my favorite song of Gypsy. I like The Vision.
Really?
I thought that was a very deep song. And I thought it really didn't get enough attention as far as production.
Okay.
I thought if somebody would have listened to that song a little more, they could have got just a very good hit record out of that. I thought the vision was very deep.
So what does this do for the band, having an album out on a national label now?
Well, it sent us, you know, sent us on a tour that we were totally enjoying. You know, we were all over the United States, to Hawaii and Canada. Well, Canada didn't happen until the third album. We thought we were happy. We thought it was all fine and good until we looked in the mail for a paycheck and it wasn't there. We found out that only people who were making money were the people that wrote and produced.
But Enrico's the writer on the majority of these songs.
As I said, the people that were making money were the people that wrote and produced. And you didn't get production credits at that time. You have writer's rights.
Royalties for songwriters.
Well, yeah, you could call them that.
Jim, your song on here, the one you wrote.
Man of Reason, don't like it.
Why?
Couldn't tell you. I just don't like it. I mean, I've written a lot of songs, and that one is probably one of my least favorites that I've written. I don't know. There was some strange, you know, there's some, at this time when we were doing these songs, it's difficult to explain. Rico was writing just about everything, and Owl was helping him. That's Walsh. And I was married, and I was living in a different part of town, a different part of Hollywood. So I wasn't really hanging around with them, but what I do, I was polishing a lot of errors and, you know, in their productions and stuff, but, you know, getting no credit for it at all, which didn't bother me. I was just happy to be alive, happy to be home. So you're referring
to the war,
yes,
your
yes.
time at the service.
Yes, I am. I was happy to be alive and kind of lost my leadership qualities. I was just tickled. I figured, the civilians, they got to have it together. So I went along with it, and it turned out I should have been a little more assertive. I'm not upset with anything. I'm tickled to be where I am, Tommy, tell you. You know what I mean? I'm happy with the way things turned out.
Who did all the background vocals on this?
Me, Walsh, and Rico. We'd do the three parts, and then we'd change parts. Like one of us would do the low part, middle part, high part. Then we'd change, and one of us would do the middle part, low part, high part, and then we'd all change. So we had three different voices singing every part. There would be like nine voices, but it was just our three voices, okay? So I'd sing as high as I could. If I couldn't sing that, I'll let Owl do that one twice. Walsh pretty much had the highest voice, and he excellent voice, just excellent voice.
How would you say the Los Angeles studios compared to the Minneapolis studios?
Oh boy!
At that time,
just engineers more than anything. The equipment was the same, but it was just the engineer and the production and the producer and the people that operated them—that was the difference. Because the studios in Minneapolis at that time, they were getting all the right equipment, but they didn't have a clue as to how to use them. And that's what we learned in L.A. These people, they've been doing that, for, you know, forever. So, you know, you learned a lot. In a couple of weeks, you learned a lot in Los Angeles with the same equipment. Well, I mean, yeah, it was big fun. It was all big fun.
Okay, so what happens next with Gypsy? After the first double album.
That woman. How that photograph of that woman got in that album. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's
like,
a personality.
What are you trying to do, though? I mean, I couldn't believe that. I mean, I loved the album, but that face. Couldn't you find somebody pretty?
Well, it is a gypsy, right?
I don't know that. Looks like a dead gypsy to me. Sorry. Yeah, look at it, for God's sake. It looks like a Twilight Zone.
You had some personnel changes here, Jim, on the second album.
That would be Willie Weeks was the main one. Boy, Willie was something.
So Donnie Larson was gone.
Well, I'm going to tell you one thing about Donnie. I always thought Donnie was good enough. I mean, Willie Weeks was probably the best bass player in the United States right then. But we didn't need that. We didn't need the best bass player in the United States. Donnie was good enough for Gypsy. And to my soul today, I still believe that Donnie would have been just fine. Third album, we went with Randy Cates, but then again, Randy Cates, boy, he was something else. Randy was really something. Okay, we're on the second album. Willie Weeks, Bill Orton, right?
So your second album comes out on Metro Media.
Right.
The following year, 1971.
Okay.
And that's called In the Garden. What studio did you record this one at?
Larrabee? Huh. Shakes his head, yes. Okay, Larrabee. I was right then, wasn't I? And that the guy that produced us, wait a minute, Clark Burroughs. And I believe he had something to do with the association. So he knew how to do the vocals and stuff. He and his wife, who I'm sorry, I can't remember her name now, but it was Clark and his wife Burroughs. Do you have that name for me? Mm-hmm. Okay, then be that as it will.
Did Metro Media assign Clark Burroughs?
Yes.
To produce it?
Yes.
Okay.
Clark was, he was a very talented guy too, I gotta say. Clark was very talented.
And do you remember the engineer?
But he also didn't have the canoes to say, no, or this is the way this will be. This will be this way. You will shorten this song. You will make this. That was the problem Gypsy had. God, just about all the way through our career, we never had a producer that had the cajoles, to stop us.
From the long song.
Exactly. No. Yeah, exactly. From being all the Gypsy was, you know what I mean? They should have pulled this back. Somebody should have said, no, it will not be the way. It will be this way. You will do it this way. You won't do it. If somebody would have said that to us, we would have done it that way. But it never happened.
But someone could argue the songs weren't meant to be 3-minute songs.
Well, yeah, but then again, you can argue, well, where are you today? Why aren't you on television doing your Rush, reconditioning, your Toto? You know Toto? I saw them the other night. Oh, God, I just enjoyed it so much. Toto looked to me like they were like Gypsy of the future. They're like Gypsy of the future. And Steve is such a guitar player. And I mean, that the songs, it's like we were almost on our way there, and then the rug just got pulled, you know?
How was Larrabee different than Devonshire, the studio?
Smaller. Same stuff. Everybody
16
had
tracks?
Yeah, everybody had the same stuff.
Do you remember who the engineer was?
I really don't, but I am told it was Jerry Barnes.
Okay.
But I remember one thing they had there was they had a Mellotron.
Explain what a Mellotron was.
That was a machine that was the first thing before they come out with a synthesizer that had tapes. It had like 25 or 30 different tapes in it with recorded music on them. You push a button and it would make the sound of that instrument. You'd push another button and it would make a sound of a vocalist, like a ah, and then it'd do a ah, have a female vocalist. And that was the first kind of synthesizer thing. And I think the union made these things illegal, because you were putting musicians out of work by using a Mellotron. Well, you could have used a female vocalist or a male vocalist. You were using a machine that wasn't costing you anything.
Was this something the Moody Blues started?
Mellotron, they might have done that. Right after, I think, well, that, of course, they weren't from the United States, so they got away with it, I think. But then right after that came the synthesizer with that Moog. Synthesizer, that was the first thing. And they tried to make that illegal too, but they couldn't get away with it.
So the second album comes out, and they put out a 45. A side is As Far As You Can See. Anything happen with that 45?
No. I couldn't even hum you a bar of that song, to tell you the truth.
Was there talk of doing a double album again for a follow up?
I couldn't tell you how that came about. they figured they'd do a double cover, but not a double record.
Did you have any songs on this album?
I mean, look. Is this the second one? Nope. Wow, there's not many songs on this album. Wow, how did we get away with that?
How did Bill Orton come to join the band?
This is when he came back to Minneapolis. And they were both here, and we listened to Bill and Willie playing together in the Mystics. Was it they were playing in then? And just fabulous. These guys were just awesome, awesomely good, both of these guys. And Donnie was kind of becoming disillusioned with other members of the band. Yeah, that was an uncomfortable period. So anyway, we hired Willie and Bill. And you figure, how can you get along wrong with Billy and, you know, and Willie? We get on the road. Turns out it doesn't make any difference how good the bass player and drummer are. You still got to have a song. You got to have a vocalist. Don't matter how good the bass player is. Doesn't matter how good the drummer is. How good the keyboard player is, you got to play the song. That's where the hit record is. The singer. The words. That's where the hit is. So we turned out, we got real good on the road, and we were kicking everybody's butt on the road and everything. But you'd play in front of the other band that have hits, and you kicked their butt. But they were the ones that had the hits. So after it's all said and done, yeah, gee, Gypsy were really something. Boy, that Guess Who, boy, they had them hit records, didn't they? So, we took the wrong path, I think. Tried to get too good, and we failed to notice this. Musicians, if you're playing to impress musicians do not buy records. Okay? You got to play for people. They're the ones that buy records. They got to walk away from that concert whistling something. If you're playing something that's tootling and you're just tootling your ass off, they're not going to walk out of there whistling your tootling. They're going to walk away from there whistling a melody. So you got to write a melody. You got to sing a melody, and it took a long time for me to dawn. You know, for that to dawn on me, but now that it's dawned on me, you know, it's a little bit too late, but I don't care. You know, at least it did dawn on me.
Are you saying Gypsy was a band for musicians?
Yeah. We were playing too hard, too difficult, too complicated. It was just too complicated. We were wondering, well, why is Wild Thing such a big hit? Well, duh, listen to it. You know, why is it not a hit?
Sometimes dumb, quirky songs.
They're not really that dumb. A hit record is a hit record, and it requires a certain level of intelligence that is appealing to the public. I think it was, Lawrence Welk was talking with Bob Dylan. He said, you know, Bob, 90% of the world is a square. Okay? That's who you're selling records to. If you're dealing with that 10% that's hip, you're never going to get a hit record. And I'm not saying that everybody's square. You know, I'm not saying it's just like the average person is not a musician. They hear a melody, they like it. That's who you have to write and present music to.
You once told me in order to have a hit song, you had to break equipment in the studio. What did you mean by that?
No, I meant you can't just be that's good enough. You got to be fantastic. You got to be absolutely superb. It doesn't mean you got to be the superb musician. You got to come out of there with that song that's just when you're listening to it and you go, that's a hit.
But in addition, you have to push the
you got to damn near break things in order to make it work. You damn near got to break stuff in order to make it work that good.
And there's only a certain number of engineers
and
producers.
But you can't do that knowing you're breaking things.
But is there only a limited number of producers and engineers who know how to push the equipment to get a hit song?
No. Luck is... Well, there's one producer that really breaks my heart that ended up the way he did his Spector. Some of the best songs I've ever liked in my life, Phil Spector produced.
The Wall of Sound.
And for him to, well, not even before that Wall of Sound of his happened, those songs, the first one of his was To Know Him Is to Love Him.
By the Teddy Bears.
And he wrote that for his father. So there was a good heart going on there. And then to wind up where he did now, you know.
Maybe he pushed it.
Well, I was in Los Angeles for a long time, and there have been stories about Spector been going on for a long time there too. Same with Ike Turner. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing going on about him showing up in different studios, and you figure, how can these people be so talented and be so odd?
Is there a fine line between genius and madness?
Boy,
In the case of Spector.
Well, there, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's you know, obvious. But then again, there's that line between people like, I don't know, you know, like Ray Charles or Tom Jones or people like that that are just nice people and just very talented, and they remain to be nice people. They never, you know, and they're also talented, you know. So it's you know, there's no format. They're all different.
Right.
But I found that some of the nicest people I've met, some of the most talented people I've met, turned out to be some of the nicest people I've met.
Okay, so your second album comes out, In the Garden. What happens next with Gypsy?
We're on the road so much, I don't even really remember what was going on. We'd get off the road and we'd write. We'd put these songs together, and, you know, I'd help. Me and Bill and Randy would kind of... Randy Cates, a hell of a bass player.
Where did Randy come from?
Texas.
How did you find him?
It's a good question. Deserves a good answer. Right about the same time that we were in between albums, and Randy, I just remember the first time I heard Randy, I thought, this guy good. This is the next bass player.
What were some of the places you played on a national level?
Fillmore East, Fillmore West. We got to know Bill Graham very good. He was very nice. He actually gave us jerseys, not T-shirts. He gave us jerseys. I remember one night we were playing, this is the Fillmore West, we were playing there with Spirit. And I love that band, Spirit. Those are my favorite bands ever. But we had finished our second set, and we were back in the office with Bill, and Spirit was on stage playing their last set. And a drummer, Ed Cassidy, was on stage, and they were doing, like, it went into the drum solo thing, and Ed was just going, and this kept going on, and we're talking with Bill, we keep hearing that, and Bill looks at me and he says, God, it looks like Spirit doesn't want to play here anymore. Whoa.
How about any of the big outdoor festivals across the country?
Well, Macon was the biggest one. That was 400,000 people.
That's Macon, Georgia?
Macon, Georgia. It was supposed to be the Atlanta Pop Festival, 1970. I used to have a T-shirt, but it ended up being in Macon, Georgia. And Hendrix played at 3rd of July at midnight. He played the Star Spangled Banner thing. That was pretty awesome. And what happened? Okay, what's the guy's name that did What a Day for a Daydream?
John Sebastian.
John Sebastian was on stage. So he's up there singing. All of a sudden, his drummer starts playing behind him. He looks more like, what the hell? So he lets the drummer play. So I'm looking up on the stage, and I say, God, this is McFadden. This is the guy I played drums with. I played in my band in Vietnam.
Who's McFadden?
McFadden, the drummer. He's a pretty damn good drummer. But this is the guy that I didn't choose. Okay, but he's up playing drums. You know, he's a good drummer. But I chose a different drummer that could sing. Okay, I got out of the field in Vietnam, by the way, for almost 2 months, and I played rock and roll all over the country. And then Tet came up in 1968. We all got sent back to our units. But then they forgot what rank I was, and they thought I was a sergeant. So, yeah, things were pretty good. Anyway, so McFadden's up there playing drums. And I walk up to him after, I go, McFadden. He goes, Johnson. This is, you know, years after Vietnam.
How many people were at that concert?
There was 400,000 people. And to stand up on stage in front of 400,000 people is... It's kind of hard to explain because you really can't choose anyone to look at. So what you do is you find somebody to look at. All of a sudden it becomes you and that person you're looking at, and you play your gig.
So somehow you make a transition here to RCA.
That was because of guess who's manager?
Don Hunter. How did Gypsy get connected with Don Hunter?
He was the guess who's manager. He had heard us somewhere, and he wanted to buy us from Steve Freeman. So we went through my father-in-law, who was one of the best attorneys from around here at that time we were living here. And they straightened the thing out, and Freeman got paid off by Don Hunter, which turned out, God knows what would have happened if we wouldn't have done that. But it just didn't work. We ended up being a tax write-off for the Guess Who.
Did you go on tour with the Guess Who?
Oh, yeah. We played all over the United States, Hawaii, Canada.
And how do you get connected with RCA Records for your third album?
That was from Don Hunter. That's who, Guess Who we're recording with.
They were on RCA.
And that was, Brian Christian was the engineer, and...
Who was the producer?
Richardson.
What's his first name?
Jack.